Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Four Parties and a Funeral by Maria DiRico, narrated by Devon Sorvery. Chapter 1. If anyone had told Mia Karina that one day she'd wake up in bed next to a former male model, she would have spit whatever she was drinking out of her nose. Yet here she was. Mia enjoyed a languid stretch and was rewarded with an angry meow from Doorstop, the Abyssinian diva who commanded the foot of the bed and was not happy about being woken up by an accidental nudge from Mia's foot. Mia sat up and reached over to pet the annoyed cat. "Sorry, sweetie. I didn't know you were there." Doorstop made a sound that in human would have translated to, "Yeah, right," and repositioned himself. The male model, still asleep next to Mia, muttered something unintelligible and then said quite clearly, "Bacon and grape jelly." Mia giggled. Shane stirred and opened one eye.
"What?"
"You were talking in your sleep about work again. It's adorable." Shane yawned and sat up.
"What did I say?"
"Bacon and grape jelly."
"Right, for the Kiwanis Club breakfast in the morning.
Practically our only event this month that isn't a prom, graduation party, or wedding." Shane and Mia were co-workers at the Bellevue Banquet Manor, the party facility turned over to her recovering mobster father, Ravello, as payment for a gambling debt. Mia breathed a sigh of relief when Ravello asked her to help him run Bellevue as a legitimate, entirely legal enterprise for the Boldano family. She'd breathed sighs laced with lust and desire when Shane signed on at Bellevue as operations manager. By Christmas, she and Shane had succumbed to their mutual attraction, but feeling guilty about the impropriety of a boss-employee relationship, they'd kept their romance on the down-low for months. Shane laced his fingers together and placed his hands between his head and the pillow.
"Speaking of weddings, we need to find out if it's okay to give Jamie and Madison cash as a present. I don't see a bride in Connecticut carrying a satin sack for checks."
Mia chuckled at the reference to the most important accessory to a bride's outfit at the many Italian weddings she'd grown up with, the money sack. "At least not Madison's family. They're a little upscale for the sack. Nona said that in her day, sacks didn't even exist. People just stuffed the checks or cash down the bride's cleavage, and when that filled up, in the groom's pockets or pants. And now sacks are old school. Did I tell you that for the Castro Pradeep wedding, I have to print out business cards they can hand out to their guests with their Zelle, PayPal, and Venmo account information?"
"Huh, that's a wedding favor I didn't see coming."
Shane's extremely handsome face creased in a frown.
"I still haven't figured out what to wear to the barbecue."
He and Mia, along with Ravello, the Boldanos, and a Queens/Long Island contingent, would soon be trooping up to Worthington, Connecticut, for a party hosted by Madison's parents in honor of the happy couple.
"Me neither," Mia said. "This is like a whole new world. Jamie showed me pictures of the Wythes' house, where they're hosting the party. It's old and white."
"Like Madison's relatives," Shane said with a sly grin.
Mia chortled, then wagged a finger at Shane.
"Don't. Be nice, you. It's not her fault her family goes back a million years. Jamie said the house is, like, almost as old as the country, and her parents are super nice. They don't act entitled at all. But what to wear? What to wear?
As Mia pondered this, she tapped an index finger painted with sparkly gold nail polish against her lip. The other four nails were painted a soft sea green.
"They sail a lot in Connecticut," Shane offered. "Maybe stuff with anchors?"
Mia brightened.
"Great idea. I'll see what I can find online."
Shane yawned, then leaned over to Mia, gifting her with a kiss that knocked all images of anchors and America's founding fathers from her thoughts.
"I gotta go home and shower before work. It's gonna be a day."
Mia sighed. "I know." Big Donnie Boldano,
Jamie's father, and technically the boss of all bosses to the Bellevue crew, had begged Mia to hire Jamie's older brother, little Donnie Boldano, to do something, anything, at the banquet facility. At the ripe old age of 34, Big Donnie's namesake was still trying to find himself. This was to be his first day on the job. Mia and Shane's plan was to let little Donnie figure out which angle of the catering business interested him the most, and then place him there. Shane kissed Mia again, then tossed off the covers and planted his feet on the ground. Mia followed his lead. Shane threw on his clothes and headed out of the bedroom to the stairs that led from Mia's second-floor apartment to the first floor. The couple slowly crept down the stairs to avoid disturbing Mia's grandmother, Elisabetta, who startled them by being in the two-family home's front vestibule, having just returned from a power stroll with the Army, her friend group of neighborhood seniors. The octogenarian wore a bright pink velour tracksuit and matching sneakers. She greeted the couple with a "Buongiorno, ma'am," Shane said with a respectful nod. Elisabetta shook her head, perplexed. "I don't know why you keep sneaking out of here. You two been at it for months. You can stop now." Shane shook his head. "I'm afraid I can't, ma'am. I have too much respect for you not to sneak out." Elisabetta shrugged. "What is it the kids say now? Whatevs." Enabled by the ability to stream, a newfound affection for teen dramas and reality shows had led to an interesting vocabulary for an 80-something. Shane addressed Mia in the most business-like tone possible. "I will see you at work, Mia." Mia responded in kind. "I will see you there, Shane." Elisabetta rolled her eyes as Shane headed out the door. "You're a big girl, Bella Bambina," she said to her granddaughter. "You're allowed to have a boyfriend. You just said I was a big girl and a beautiful baby in the same sentence," Mia teased. Elisabetta muttered something less flattering under her breath. "You're making me salty." Mia burst out laughing at her grandmother's use of a slang expression popular with millennials for expressing frustration, prompting a dose of side-eye from Elisabetta. "Sorry, Nonna, but I don't even use salty when I'm ticked off or upset. I'm too old for it." "Meh, like it says on the mug you got me, age is just a number. And you know what I mean. You need a life, especially after what you've been through with that filio di puttana you married." Elisabetta punctuated her ire with an angry spit, then bent down to tie a sneaker that had come undone. "I like that, Shane, and I'll like him even better when he puts a ring on it." Mia favored her grandmother with an affectionate grin. "Simmer down, Beyonce. Shane and I aren't anywhere near that point. We're like what they call friends with benefits. Yeah, yeah, I know. It's all over my shows. I'm not a fan of that friends with benefit merda." Elisabetta rose to her feet with a groan. "Marrone, queste vecchie ossa. I'm gonna give myself a goal today. Get up once without groaning or cracking." Elisabetta headed into her apartment, and Mia bounded up the stairs to hers. First stop was her bedroom, where she pulled the cover off the cage of her pet parakeet, Pizzazz. She opened the cage door, and while she added pellets to the bird's food dish, Pizzazz flitted around the room, mischievously dive-bombing doorstop. The cat swatted at the bird, but, used to her antics, didn't bother to do more than that, especially since it would have required moving from a comfortable prone position. As Mia showered, she thought about what her grandmother had said. She did need a life, one she'd denied herself after her philandering husband, Adam Grosso, had gone missing with his mistress in a Miami boating accident, and Mia found herself the primary suspect in their disappearance. After a few torturous months, the mistress's body had washed up on a local beach to the screams of sunbathers. With no evidence of murder, the police wrote off Adam as missing at sea, and Mia hightailed it back home to New York. But the trauma of the experience and Adam's disappearance haunted her. It took meeting Shane for Mia to realize she'd been using the ordeal as an excuse to avoid giving her heart to another man, someone she felt very deep in her soul would never betray her. Mia stepped out of the shower. She heard Alicia Keys warbling, "New York State of Mind," indicating an incoming cell phone call. She focused on toweling herself dry and let the call go to voicemail.
"Hey, mister."
Mia's bright mood dimmed at the sound of little Donnie's voice, an unwelcome nickname for her, coupled with his gloomy tone.
"I'm gonna be late today. Sorry."
The call clicked off. "Way to start your first day," Mia muttered. She loved Big Donnie, who was her godfather in addition to being an actual godfather, but at the moment, the fact that he'd dumped his son's early midlife crisis in her lap made her feel, well, salty. "Why do I feel like this whole little Donnie thing is gonna be a disaster?" She said this to Pizzazz, following the parakeet to its commodious cage. Mia secured the cage door, gave doorstop a pet, then put on black slacks she topped with a slinky turquoise tank top she insisted to herself she chose because it was comfortable on a warm day, and not at all because Shane once commented that it matched the bright blue of her eyes. Downstairs, Mia found Elisabetta comfortably ensconced on a new recliner while watching a show on a new 50-inch smart TV, both recent 84th birthday presents from Mia and Ravello. A plate of almond biscotti sat on her lap. Mia perched on an arm of the recliner.
"What you watching, Nonna?" "One of those shows about Hollywood. They're doing a story on something about a pilot, but I don't know where the planes are."
Mia, confused, listened to the show's host, a vapid D-list actor who'd found his calling as an entertainment reporter, wax on about a project about to start production.
"He's not talking about plane pilots. He means TV pilots. That's when they shoot a first episode of a show they're gonna try and sell to the networks or streamers."
Mia gave herself a mental pat on the back for knowing this. 15 years of subscribing to People magazine had paid off.
"Huh, what's the name of the show?"
"I missed that. Hold on." Mia took the remote and rewound. She stopped after a minute and leaned in to read the screen graphic behind the host. What she saw surprised her. "It's called The Dawns of Ditmars Boulevard, and it's going to be filmed here in Astoria. They're going to follow around a bunch of family wannabes."
Elisabetta gave a sage nod and adjusted her wig, which she'd knocked askew with the comb she was using to scratch a spot on her scalp. "Dawns of Ditmars Boulevard. I heard about that show."
"Really?" Mia shot her grandmother a skeptical look. "Why would you have heard about a reality show pilot they haven't even begun to make yet?"
"Because, Miss Smarty Pants."
"Hey, an expression from your own generation. I didn't know you remembered any of those."
"Because," Elisabetta continued, ignoring Mia's good-humored dig, "Gabriella Pasqualini's grandson Paolo was gonna be on the show, and she told us all about it, but he drops out to become a priest."
"Wow, I didn't know anyone did that anymore."
"It happens. You don't know, because the paisans don't brag about it like they used to. But I don't think this Dawns of Ditmars Boulevard show is anything to brag about either."
"Agreed. Those shows live to make people look bad, or stupid, or both." Mia snagged a biscotti from Elisabetta's plate and planted a kiss on her cheek.
"I gotta get to work. Ti amo. Ti amo, bambina."
Elisabetta pointed at the TV screen.
"Guardare. It's Ditmars Boulevard. Look at all those Goombas."
Mia glanced at the long line of teens and young adults as the show host's voiceover explained they were waiting to fill out applications that might land them auditions for the show. She shook her head. What kind of nut jobs would want to be on some low-rent reality show? She was about to find out. Chapter 2. Mia sauntered into work at Bellevue Banquet Manor, still basking in the afterglow of her rendezvous with Shane. The glow faded when she saw the sign taped to the office door of employee when she felt like it, Cami Deanopoulos. Recording in progress. Do not disturb. Mia opened the door, engendering an outraged squawk from Cami. Guadalupe Cruz, the Bellevue executive chef, sat on a folding chair next to her. A professional-looking mic sat on the desk between the two women, along with a phalanx of expensive-looking electronic equipment. "Morning," Mia greeted them with purposely faked cheer. "Ma'am." Guadalupe, an army veteran who'd manned the commissary kitchen during a couple of Iraq tours, was still military through and through.
"Mia, you interrupted the recording," Cami scolded.
She crossed her arms in front of her chest and gave her boss the evil eye, pursing lips painted a retro shade of frosty pink. Cami found her style in the mid-1980s and still wore it with pride. Mia met the evil eye with a raised eyebrow. "And you are recording exactly what?"
"A true crime podcast based on the murders that involved Bellevue," Cami said, jazzed about her latest venture.
She gestured to the electronics, taking up every inch of space on her desk.
"I got Pete to pony up for top-of-the-line gear."
Pete was Cami's ex-husband, Detective Pete Deanopoulos. Pete wrote self-published thrillers under the pen name Steve Stianopoulos. Assuming he'd immediately join the pantheon of hugely popular authors like Lee Child, he'd divorced Cami to make room for the author groupies he expected to fall at his feet. Neither they nor the big paycheck he expected ever materialized, and he'd come crawling back to Cami to the benefit of her and Bellevue. A cowed Pete would do anything to win Cami back, including springing for pricey recording equipment, or revealing the occasional clue in one of the murder investigations involving the catering facility. Guadalupe stood up, her towering frame filling the room.
"I got menus to plan."
"No worries." Cami checked a piece of equipment. "I think we got a good take before Mia barged in."
"You mean greeted you on the start of the work day?" Mia said, hitting the word work hard.
"This is work," Cami replied. "Everybody loves true crime podcasts these days. It's great free publicity for Bellevue."
Mia grimaced. "Not sure how learn all about the murder victims found in or around Bellevue Banquet Manor is great publicity."
"Normally, I'd be with you on that, ma'am," Guadalupe said. "But thanks to a podcast I heard, I just booked a visit to a B&B that was the former hideout of a doomsday cult. So I'll recuse myself from this conversation."
With this, Guadalupe departed, her chef's toque grazing the top of the doorframe. Cami pondered a document on her computer screen.
"Which do you think is a better title? Catering Hall Killings or Killings at the Catering Hall?"
Mia thought for a moment. "I'd go with forget the podcast, because more important things are happening today, like little Donnie starting work here."
"That's a terrible title," Cami said with a pout.
She placed high-end earbuds in her ears and pressed a button on a recorder to play back her interview. With the Kiwanis Club breakfast in Shane's perfectly shaped, capable hands, Mia focused her attention on little Donnie, who showed up close to lunchtime for his first day at Bellevue, looking like he'd slept in his clothes, which it turned out he had.
"I got a serious overhang."
The Boldano firstborn rubbed his forehead. "Little D, as he insisted Mia call him,
it's my new Hansel. Clever, huh?"
was good-looking in a swarthy way, but at the moment, his rumpled outfit and black beard stubble gave him the look of a shipwreck victim. Mia silently prayed for patience dealing with little D.
"Everything okay?" "If it was, would I be here?" he grumped. "My kid brother's getting married, and I don't even got a girlfriend. Which reminds me, I'm not working weddings. I can't deal with some other couple's happy time right now." Fine. No weddings. Not a problem. We've got lots of graduation parties coming up. Tonight, there's one for a bunch of kids from Queen's College.
Little Dee shook his head.
Jamie went to Queen's College. I only got through high school because Dad got one of his goons to hack the school's grading software and change my F's to B's. So, no working a graduation party for me. Too depressing.
Fine. Mia said this through gritted teeth, her prayer for patience unanswered. We've also got a birthday party for a 4-year-old coming up. Not a graduation, I promise. They're all still in preschool. Little kids. Adorable.
Little Dee shook his head and whimpered. The way things are going, I'll never have children.
God help me. Mia sucked in a breath and slowly released it. She summoned a sympathetic smile.
Donnie, if you threw yourself into your work, it would distract you from your problems. You might even make some new friends.
Donnie sparked to this.
Like hot college girls?
It was Mia's turn to shake her head.
No dating the customers. Little Dee muttered an expletive and slumped in his chair. What's the point of all this anyway? Why should I help other people make happy memories?
Mia leaned forward. That's the whole point, to know you helped someone create a memory that will live forever, and you're part of that memory. Donnie, that's incredibly fulfilling.
The recalcitrant new employee responded with a skeptical, meh.
No wonder his parents wanted this guy out of the house, Mia thought to herself.
Despite being in his almost mid-30s, Little Dee still lived at home. This wasn't unusual in Mia's circle, where friends often lived at home until they married. Mia knew a woman who had 3 kids by 3 different boyfriends, but had never married, so she still lived with her parents, as did her kids. Still, most had walked down the aisle at least once, if not twice, by Little Dee's age.
Tell you what, Mia said. I'll find something for you to do that won't push your buttons. In the meantime, why don't you check out your office?
Little Dee followed her with little enthusiasm to the small office they'd carved out for him off the first floor marina ballroom, where Flushing Marina could be seen shimmering through the room's floor-to-ceiling windows, as could the LaGuardia Airport runway, where a 737 was coming in for a noisy landing. After depositing her charge, Mia scurried to her father's office, catching him as he returned from his daily lunch at Roberto's Trattoria. I wanted to warn you, there may be another murder on Bellevue property.
Ravello responded with an understanding grin.
Little Donnie.
Mia nodded.
He's Little Dee this week. He hasn't even been here an hour, and he's already making me pazzo.
She detailed her frustrating conversation with the latest Bellevue employee. As she spoke, Ravello used the back of his hand to wipe perspiration from his forehead. While her father was a large man, he was also preternaturally dry. Plus, he'd lost weight recently. It occurred to Mia that he was breathing heavier than usual, too.
You okay, Dad? You're a little not yourself.
It's all this diet and exercise Lynn's forcing on me, Ravello said, referencing his girlfriend of about a year, a federal prosecutor turned florist who owned a charming shop in Manhattan's East Village.
That should make you healthier, Mia pointed out.
I've been ordering seafood salad instead of fettuccine Alfredo.
Mia's eyes widened.
Wow, your system may be rebelling against the switch from heavy cream to lettuce.
In more ways than one. I was in the restroom at Roberto's and...
Mia held up a hand. TMI, even for a relative.
Any tips on how to manage Little Dee so I don't lose my mind?
Give him a little time to make himself feel comfortable here, Ravello advised. Meanwhile, keep checking out bookings. Something will come up he can deal with.
After conferring with her father about a few other business details, Mia returned to her office and called up the Bellevue calendar. She noticed Cammy had added a facilities tour to the schedule. Intrigued by the name of the potential future customers, she popped up from her desk and went to Cammy's office. I saw a tour for a Giles St. James Productions on the sked. What's that about?
A production company is checking out Bellevue's catering facilities for an upcoming event.
Cammy checked her reflection via her computer screen, patting down a few errant strands of frosted blonde hair.
I call giving the tour. I want to pitch them my podcast.
You can have the tour on two conditions. No pitching, at least not yet. Let him book here first.
And little Donnie shadows you.
Cammy groaned. I don't care if you're running a halfway house for mobster spawn, but spare me any extra work, like training them.
Extra work implies you do any work at all, and those are my conditions.
Fine, Cammy grumped.
It's a good thing this is the best job in the world, or I'd quit.
Mia left Cammy to deliver what she hoped would be, if not good news to little D, then at least news that didn't send the lost soul spiraling further. She found him engrossed in an app on his phone.
I've got a task I think you'll like. A production company is coming for a tour.
Cammy is leading it, and you can shadow her so you can learn how to give them yourself.
Okay.
Little D held up his phone.
What do you think? Could this be the future, Mrs. Little D?
Mia glanced at the photo of an excessively made-up, half-naked woman lying prone on a bed.
What app is this?
She looked closer.
Dee, this isn't a dating app. It's a porn site.
Your point is?
No porn in the workplace.
She gave herself props for not screaming this in his face.
Fine.
Little Dee sounded glum.
I just searched hot chicks. I was too depressed to pay close attention.
Well, undepress yourself. I'm walking you over to Cammy. She'll give you a rundown on everything you need to know for the tour. Mia personally delivered her reluctant trainee to an equally reluctant Cammy and escaped to her office. Thrilled about the possibility of a production company using Bellevue facilities, she texted Shane the news. He responded with a bitmoji of himself giving a thumbs up. Not for the first time, it struck Mia that even his avatar was gorgeous. She debated whether to go with a response involving hearts, then went with something a little more businesslike. She edited her avatar so it better reflected her coloring of dark hair, pale skin, and bright blue eyes, something she'd been meaning to do for a while, and sent Shane an image of the avatar holding a movie slate. To her delight, Shane hearted it. Curious about why a production company was scouting an Astoria location, Mia typed Giles St. James Productions into the search bar on her computer, then clicked on the company's website. The glamorous bio of company founder and president Giles St. James impressed her. Excited, Mia envisioned Bellevue as the premier Queens catering facility for a marquee Hollywood production company. She clicked on a tab marked Projects, and her enthusiasm lessened. Despite the Tony website, Giles St. James Productions only produced cheesy reality shows, including the pilot for The Dawns of Ditmars Boulevard. Mia chided herself for being judgy, and then tamped down a sudden feeling of foreboding. Chapter 3. On the way home from work that evening, Mia tried to dispel her concerns about the production company. She never knew if her instinct for trouble was the result of growing up as a mobster's daughter or some form of PTSD based on the same reason. Either way, there was no cause for concern yet. The Bellevue tour hadn't happened and might not happen at all. Plenty of prospective clients canceled appointments at the last minute. Worry is paying interest on a debt you may not owe, she told herself. Mia couldn't remember where she'd heard this saying and considered it a little complicated to unpack, but it did come in handy sometimes. She shelved all thoughts of Giles St. James Productions, replacing them with daydreams about her upcoming evening with Shane. Elisabetta waylaid her the minute she stepped inside their shared front vestibule.
Guarda!
She held up a large bag stuffed with fiber skeins in a glaring cacophony of colors.
The crafts shop is selling grab bags for a buck. You should see my haul.
Mia followed her grandmother into the living room, where...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?